Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's always hashtag quiche. I'm Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our amazing race wrap-up here for episode number 3. And I'm very excited to be back together with the person who has never yet called me an absolute idiot on the air. Here is Jessica Lees. Jessica, how are you?
Well, you know, Rob, there's a first time for everything.
Yeah.
Do you want me to call you that?
You are an absolute idiot, dude.
Well, I'm still trying to get my passport to go to Canada in a couple of months a couple of weeks, I should say. I sent it out to get expedited to me, Jess. So don't wait until I lose it in my fanny pack.
You just got to keep the fanny pack zipped, I think, is your problem.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good call in terms of keep your fanny pack zipped. That should be in the JL rules if you ever go ahead and get those published.
I will add it to the manuscript.
Yeah.
It's getting kind of thick at this point.
Jess, it was a night of the blind U-turn, and it really wreaked some havoc, especially for Seth and Olive, who were eliminated. And nobody saw this coming but 2 weeks ago when Seth was the number one pick, Olive was his number one pick. And it was a blind U-turn that does them in. I was kind of hoping it was going to be a non-elimination leg just so that they could stay. I felt like that they kind of got done dirty a little bit on this one.
Yeah, it was really just a kind of a confluence of really terrible luck that did them in. Although I know we'll get into this a little bit more. I think it wasn't entirely out of their control.
Okay. All right. So we will talk through all of that. We will answer some of your questions that got sent in as the teams raced all the way into Tanzania, Jess.
It's a beautiful country. They went to Zanzibar.
Yes.
I know you're a Billy Joel fan.
I am. And Jess, funny you should mention this because I have a musical submission to the show. This is from Andrew Fair.
Well, it seems the race was threatened by the axe.
Jeez.
On Thursday the 10th, it didn't lose its style.
Yeah, I'll play the whole thing at the end of the show.
Yeah, and I think I got the idea.
Thank you, Andrew Fair, for that. And so, Jess, believe it or not, on Amazing Race Perfect Strangers, we're down to just but 8 teams.
That's gone very fast. And I think the most interesting thing that's happened in my world is the first 3 teams that went out. Dan and Mike and I did our preseason draft. We each had 1 complete team on our board, and all 3 of the complete teams that we had are gone.
That's eerie, Jess.
It's very eerie. I feel like our draft was cursed.
It was a cursed draft. Now, I know that there is only a very, very small percentage of the audience that cares about the fantasy draft. But so how does this work? So I have Ashton and I get 7 times her points.
Your points are largely symbolic, Rob. The only way that you actually win the draft is if Ashton and Vang win the whole thing. You can be co-champions.
I think that I should be the only champion. If you guys picked 21 people, I got left with 1 person. And if she wins the race, I'm pretty sure I should win.
Well, no, because Dan has Vank on his team and we gave him more crap than we're giving you for having Ashton. So really, I think if Vank and Ashton win, then you and Dan Heaton get to be co-champions.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you say so, I really feel like that if the 3 of you together can't pick both people that got drafted that won the amazing race. I mean, what kind of amazing race experts are you?
Well, clearly my number 1 and number 2 draft picks going out simultaneously in 9th place is a pretty good indicator that I probably don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay, well, let's talk through this night that sent Jess's draft picks out of the game. And we picked up right where we left off this week, Jess, where we got to revisit a very frustrated Sarah as she explains what was going on at the pit stop with all the teams.
And then he goes in the corner and starts talking about his junk again.
Every subsequent thing that I went down hurt more, and it all was honest.
I like Shamir's voice. He's got like a Tone Loc kind of voice.
I guess so.
Yeah. And but she's tired of hearing about his junk.
As are we all, I think. Like, I mean, all the dudes put up a brave face because I know, I mean, he went to the audience of people that he thought might care. And I think they kind of still didn't.
Yeah. These are all sort of what, like war stories. It's like, and then you wouldn't believe the next thing that happened to my balls.
So is this something that guys do? They just sit around talking about trauma that's happened to their balls?
I don't know. It's not something that people talk to me about often, but I would imagine if something happened to me, if I had some sort of testicular trauma, I do think it's probably like a good cocktail party story, no?
Yeah, maybe so. And I mean, in the future, the most popular show on television is going to be Ow My Balls, so...
Yeah. You know, God knows that he brought some enjoyment to you and I last week. So I think that probably, yeah, if you're a good sport about it, I think that it's something that can be, you know, a funny topic of conversation. I think the problem for Shamir is that it's he's not telling it like and then you wouldn't believe what happened to me today.
Well, and I think we learned something about Shamir this episode that kind of makes me feel a little bit better about spending an entire hour on his balls last week.
What's that?
Because we saw him get injured again.
Yes, he's accident
and we saw him get really, really quite upset about it. And I'm thinking there's kind of one of several things at play here.
Mm-hmm.
Like either he's a, you know, whiny crybaby or
that's possible.
He really does feel pain at a level that's more intense than any of the rest of us.
Oh.
Which, if that's the case, I feel really bad for the guy. And, you know, like he feels a splinter in his finger as acutely as a harness like rubbing up against his junk the wrong way. It's no way to live.
Yeah. He's like somebody with like super hearing and then there's like an orchestra playing and he's like holding his ears and he's like, what's wrong? And it's like everything. He's so sensitive.
Yeah, he's just extremely sensitive. And, you know, if that's the case, my heart goes out to him. Or the other thing is maybe he just made the editors really, really mad at some point. And so that's the edit he's going to get.
Maybe. All right. So we'll see what comes next for Shamir. Again, not a great night for Shamir once again this week.
When has Shamir had a good night?
The first week.
Yeah, I guess he did all right.
The first week. We didn't really talk much about him. So, all right. So the teams are all going to be headed from Sao Paulo to Tanzania, and they're all going to be off on the same flight with the blind double U-turn ahead. Jess, do you like the fact that all of the teams were going to be arriving at the same time on a leg with a double U-turn? Because it really does even the playing field. It's like you can U-turn anybody if you're just the fastest off the plane.
Well, I think the U-turn, I have a lot of problems with this U-turn. This was really maybe the most poorly planned U-turn we have seen on the race ever.
Wow.
It makes me kind of hate the U-turn in general. Like it was so badly executed that I really like I'd be good if we never had a U-turn again.
Okay, well, explain to me the problem, because I didn't notice anything particularly wrong with it other than they made all the teams pretty much even before they allowed anybody to U-turn anyone.
Well, that's a start. Like, you basically, the biggest problem with the U-turn in this leg is that you don't make a U when you get U-turned.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have not done anything at the point where you find out you've been U-turned, because the U-turn happened prior to the detour being completed.
Okay.
And this is bad game design. The main thing about the U-turn in the past was you had to get your detour done and you had to rush to get that thing done and knock it out and get to that board before everybody else so that you would not arrive at the board to find out that you had to actually double back and do the other one, like hence the U in the U-turn, right?
Right.
So this time, there's no, like, this is not a reward for performing a task well. This is just like, you know, shove everybody aside and get off the boat first. And there you are. And there's the U-turn board. And you're not even, like, you haven't even done anything when you find out you've gotten U-turned.
Yeah, that's a good point. Has it ever been done this way before, Jess?
It has not, because this is not what a U-turn is.
Yeah.
I feel like this was placed here, like, just kind of, they threw it in there because they hoped there would be a lot of drama, and it did cause a fair amount of drama, but it was really, it's terrible game design. And I think they need to start putting the U-turn back where it belongs, which is at the end of the, at the end of the detour.
Now, this is the first of three U-turns this season. Do you sense they'll all be like this, or do you think that it will return to its regular placement?
I think we're going to get a variety of U-turn types. I don't know. I hope that this is not a permanent decision with regard to placement. But, you know, we've seen where we have a few U-turns, we tend to see like different types of U-turns. The next one we see, there might just be one U-turn slot, but you have to take credit for it.
Yeah. Were you surprised that it was a blind U-turn this early in the race?
I was a little surprised because I feel like they want to stir up that kind of team conflict, and they're not going to get it if you don't know who U-turned you.
Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, going all the way back to, you know, Lex Vandenberg in Survivor Africa, I think it's a reality TV trope of who did this to me. And sometimes that can end up being more drama than actually just knowing who it was.
That's true. When there's a larger number of teams, I guess you do want to have your blind U-turn then so that there are more suspects.
Right. And ultimately, you had Seth and Olive go out. Did they ever know who it was that U-turned them?
It doesn't look like it ever even came up. Yeah. Like, I've heard other teams discussing it, but they themselves are just kind of like, oh, we've been U-turned, as if it was like something that happened, you know, independent of anybody causing it. They're like, well, this is a thing that happened to us,
yeah,
not a thing that was done to us.
I mean, Matt and Redmond did point the finger at Tara and Joey, who denied it, but it was them. They were the people that knocked Seth and Olive out of the race.
They indeed supplied it.
Yes, they did. And interestingly, is that some police officer on police officer crime? Is Seth is a police officer, and so is Joey, right?
Well, I think, Rob, you should know better than anybody because you covered Survivor Cayenne.
Yes, no cops are us.
Yeah, you know that just because two people are cops, that doesn't mean they're going to stick to an alliance.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wonder if Joey felt bad afterwards, or maybe not. He's just like, hey, don't hate the player, hate the game.
I think that seems to be the attitude behind this. And I think I don't think there are hard feelings with regard to this half of the U-turn at any rate.
Okay, Jess, I want to get an update from you on Team Matt and Redmond, who really have been standouts so far, at least in terms of completing the tasks. They too will get U-turned after last week telling Vank and Ashton they were going to they had this handshake deal. They were going to get to a sign in for the helipad, and then they were going to flip a coin. They had some interesting moments tonight. Did I catch this right that Matt and Redmond said that they're having fun because they're the men team?
Yes, they decided, like, you know, their hashtag is the boys, but they're like, no, we're the men.
Right. But are they saying so they have no drama on their team because it's the male team?
I couldn't tell if that was the implication or not, but given like how weird and hostile they got on the mat, I almost feel like maybe that is what they meant. But I think the intention was more like, we're not the boys, you know, we're the men, and we're like manly grown ass men who eat steak for breakfast and like kick things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't want to disparage them. I thought it was more the first thing, which I thought is ironic because they are the team that has the most drama with everybody.
I thought everybody liked them. That's what Redmond said. Yes. Matt.
Yes. They have lots of friends. Just not Vank and Ashton. Actually, no, it's still Vank, not Ashton.
I don't think, you know, for all of the that they said they liked Vank, they sure hassled him a lot in the wake of this U-turn.
Yeah. All right. Well, we see from the moment that the U-turn is going to be announced, Vank and Ashton say they know what they're doing. Matt and Redmond, Jess, over the years, you have blogged and podcasted many times about the social game on The Amazing Race. Was this another great example of don't piss the other teams off because it will come back to bite you?
Well, I think that's true, but I think it's also I think it's also a pretty big example of don't U-turn a team that you expect to see again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so you think that this was bad on Vank and Ashton to U-turn Matt and Redmond?
I think it's understandable that they would feel like they wanted to U-turn them. But I think especially the way this U-turn was set up, they couldn't see the tasks. They didn't know if one was impossible. They really were. This was a blind U-turn in many ways. I think there's just too many variables in play. I wouldn't want to go near this U-turn.
Yeah, but I think that they felt justified based on last week when they said they weren't going to wait for them to flip the coin. For Matt and Redmond, who were sort of laughing with glee about screwing them over last week, you know, in hindsight, that was like a really dumb thing. Like the helipad, I don't even think you could go on. Like they could have just like hung out and waited for them.
They could have. And I think the dumbest move in general was to make that agreement in the first place.
Right.
I think what they should have said in that moment was, if we both show up to that sign up sheet at the same time, we'll flip a coin. But if we get there first, all bets are off.
Yeah. It just seems like a silly thing to piss off other teams in the second leg of the Amazing Race, where you don't know where it's going to come back to bite you. And they didn't really make an effort to try to smooth things over with them last week.
Right. And it would have, I think you're very right in that it wouldn't have cost them anything to just honor the deal, no matter how stupid it was. And instead, they just kind of made an enemy where they didn't need to make one. And in that case, I think, like, given all of that, they definitely deserved to get their U-turn.
Okay. Jess, we saw a lot of Scott and Brooke tonight. They had a bounce back week last week, even though Brooke fell down, but it was going to be a lot of drama going on between them. We found out, and maybe this was going on in the first two episodes and I just didn't see it, but so Scott has his own hashtag and it's on a hat, and it's hashtag quiche. That's K-E-E-S-H. It means you're hotter than hot, but still cool.
What's cooler than being cool?
Ice cold. Just
all right.
Did Scott make this up or is this a thing?
I've never heard this before, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not a thing.
Yeah.
I'm old and not cool. So
yes, like Brooke.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm on the Urban Dictionary because Scott had said you're too old to be quiche. Kidding, not kidding. So according to the Urban Dictionary, the top definition for quiche is quiche equals money, as in, yo, homeboy, you got some quiche on you, or don't got some quiche, so I'm going to ask my pops.
So maybe is this like when you say somebody is so money and they don't even know it?
It could be. The second definition, according to the Urban Dictionary, is that to be quiche is on the cutting edge of fashion, synonymous with chic, as in, Tammy, did you see Brenda's new purse? And Mary says, OMG, it was so quiche. So it does seem as though that is a secondary definition of quiche.
I guess that sounds like a word that Gretchen Wieners would try to make happen.
Yeah. Okay. Is quiche going to happen?
Maybe it's happening somewhere, but I haven't seen it make it into the general vernacular.
Yeah.
And I don't think it will.
Yeah. You know what's not going to happen? People wearing hats that say quiche.
That's definitely not going to happen.
That is not quiche.
So not quiche.
Very unquiche. All right. So, all the teams got on the flight to go to Tanzania. They had to get to the newspaper. Really, nothing comes of it. Now, Matt and Redmond, they end up sort of like cutting a line that all the teams are on. And Ashton uses this as another excuse to sort of like ruin their reputation in the court of public opinion. Like, see, this is what they do.
Yeah. Although that was, again, that was something they really didn't have to do. Like, everybody is getting on the same ferry. Like,
yeah.
What is that? What is that really gaining them? It's just kind of making them look like idiots. And maybe that's what they want. Like, maybe that's how they're, maybe they've devised this method of, this is how we're going to get airtime. We're going to be the villains this season, and nobody's going to expect it of a laid back snowboarder and a guy with one leg. We're just going to surprise everybody and be the evil guys. But this gained them literally nothing.
I don't think that's what it is. I don't think that they're sort of like going for anything sort of meta. I think that their attitude is just sort of like, we are just going to do whatever it takes. Everybody else can just deal with it. even if they U-turn us, we'll beat the U-turns and we're not going to play a social game.
Well, in fairness, I have to give them a lot of credit for crushing those detours. They did a really amazing job at the tasks. And while I think they are taking a lot of unnecessary risks by pissing people off for no apparent reason, that was really an amazing performance, and they do kind of get my respect. They get kind of the MVP award for how well they manage those detours. And by contrast, you know, it makes it harder to feel bad for Seth and Olive, because clearly it was possible in a vacuum to knock those two tasks out and make up time.
Sure, I agree. And Matt and Redmond, they are the best team in terms of putting the tasks together. But it's a little bit of like a tortoise in the hare type situation, where I do believe that their overconfidence is the source of them just saying, okay, we can be obnoxious, do whoever we want. You can't stop us. And as we saw tonight, it can create problems for them where they should just be smoking everybody. Like, imagine if they didn't have to get U-turned, they would have probably been the first place team.
Yeah, and they could be one of these like Robin Brennan type teams that just kind of keeps their heads down and takes like all of the first places and ends up winning the whole thing.
Like, to not piss people off on this race, I mean, would it have taken 5 extra minutes? Would they be 5 minutes slower if they decided that they were going to just not piss people off or go stand at the back of the line or smooth things over with Vank and Ashton? Like, there's a bunch of things that they could be doing better, which have not stopped them, haven't slowed them down too much, but could be problems with them ultimately winning the race.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think they should expect, the way that they've been acting, they expect to be eating U-turns for the entire rest of the game.
Yeah, two more to come in this season. And you can, if you've been U-turned once, you can continue to be U-turned.
Oh, yeah, you can be U-turned infinite times, I think.
But is it using the U-turn? You can only do that once?
There used to be a rule in place that you could only use the U-turn once, but it seems like that rule has kind of started to fall by the wayside.
Okay. So we get to the U-turn board, blind U-turn board. It looked like that the U-turn board seemed like it was a little bit more DIY this time around, Jess. Did you pick that up?
Yeah, that's being charitable. I was going to say janky.
Yeah, well, if you have three, you can't really, you know, put a lot of money in the budget to make lots of fancy U-turn boards. And Tara and Joey decide they're going to U-turn Seth and Olive. Seth and Olive get knocked out of the race. Did you like this move, Jess?
Well, I think we have to give them some credit because it worked. But this is one of these things.
Don't be results
where
oriented.
That's the thing. It's very, I can't be results oriented about this because I think, frankly, it's kind of a terrible move at this juncture of the game, especially where this U-turn board was. Now, if this had been on the other side of the detour, like everybody finishes putting together their desks and, you know, Tara and Joey get done putting their desk together first, they get to the U-turn board and they know that the basket weaving is much, much harder, then it certainly makes sense to take a strong team that's behind you, make them go weave those baskets. Everybody seems pretty close together. We kind of have a sense of what each task entails. Sure, that's a great time to U-turn a strong team. I want to say it was in season 16, we saw a very strong team go out very early. We saw Lou and Michael deploy a U-turn on Joe and Heidi, who were kind of favorites to go very far into the game. But the second half of that detour was so hard, they ended up going out in that leg. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the kind of thing, if you know the other task is going to be hard, if you know that the team is a little bit far behind you and could be a lot far behind you as a result, that's when you turn a team that's like right on your heels, that's very strong. I think when you don't know what's up ahead, that's a big risk to take. And just because it paid off doesn't mean that it's good race play.
Okay. Vank and Ashton are the second team to arrive. They are going to U-turn Matt and Redmond. We discussed this. They will have a discussion with Matt and Redmond about it in a few moments. So, Jess, let's talk a little bit about the two tasks, build it or weave it. It did seem as though Build It was a lot harder, but teams seem to have a lot of trouble with Weave It also.
It looks like a brute force versus a skills based. Like Build It, there was a little bit of skill involved, but nobody seemed to have a terrible amount of trouble with it. It was just kind of physically taxing.
Mm-hmm.
But Weave It looked like there was definitely a learning curve. And, you know, if you crochet things for a living and you still can't figure out how to do this.
Poor London. Yeah.
Do I think this is technically a 5-hole? Maybe not, but it was close.
It was close enough. Okay. So, Jess, talk about Matt and Redmond versus Vank and Ashton. I almost feel like that it's not right to even include Matt in this. It feels like that Redmond is the hothead here.
Yeah, it feels like both of these teams have a hothead and a laid-back person.
Yes.
And you kind of see Redmond and Ashton going at it. And then you see Vank and Matt kind of standing in the background like, well, I have to have some loyalty to my partner, but, you know, I don't really know this person that well. I don't want to get involved in their stuff, but they're sucking me in. It's a little bit awkward.
Yeah. Well, they were not happy to see they were U-turned. Neither were Seth and Olive. We have all these teams riding on boats to get to the tasks. Matt and Redmond start questioning Tara and Joey. They said, did you U-turn Seth and Olive? They said, nope, it wasn't us. And Redmond, they lie. They're lying.
Yeah, that's accurate. And then again, like that's kind of like, what is the purpose of that?
Yeah. Okay. So we end up with a bunch of the teams heading off and attempting these tasks. We end up with, I think it was really only Matt and Redmond that attempted to do, it seemed like they were at Weave It first and they were there and they were seemed to be the only people that just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. And I think this is a pretty smart decision, actually. Like if you know you have to do both of the tasks, which again, that was stupid. It shouldn't have happened. But and you see that most of the other racers are going to one task, like go do the one that nobody else is doing. Knock that out first.
Yeah.
Because then when you get to the other task, you'll have a better sense of what's going on and you will have one task under your belt already.
Jess, can we talk about my new favorite TV character, Butterfly?
Oh, Butterfly is the best. That guy's amazing. Like, I've never seen anybody twerk on a tree before.
Yeah, Butterfly. Not only does he go and climb these trees and do death-defying stunts, but also he will sing beautiful songs like Hakuna Matata.
Well, I think that was a lyric. I don't think that was the actual Hakuna Matata song.
Well, they couldn't get the rights to it, Jess.
Okay. Like he might have sung it at some other point. Like, you know, when they have music tasks and they have to like overdub generic music over it afterwards.
Right. Is Hakuna Matata, and again, I did not get my Swahili lesson for the week, Jess. Is that an actual wonderful phrase? I always thought it was just gibberish that they made up.
No, Rob, there's a lot of actual Swahili in The Lion King.
Oh, who knew?
There was and I've seen The Lion King probably more times than someone who only recently had children should have seen it. But mm-hmm. One of the vocabulary words that they had to learn in the school was Asante Sana, which is in The Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
And Hakuna Matata apparently really means no worries.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're learning new words all the time. And it turns out some of them we heard before.
Yeah, we have not watched The Lion King at my house yet. I don't think that we can handle any of these Mufasa questions.
Ooh, say that name. I get chills.
Yeah, because there's a lot of questions that I get about every single subject of dad, what kind of bird is this? What kind of spider is this? And then that's a whole different ball game that I am just not ready and equipped to start answering those questions, those Mufasa questions.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. That's a complicated movie. And I think when they're a little bit older, they're going to love it. But yeah, and my child, pretty much, he's not supposed to even look at screens yet. So I haven't gotten to watch any of the cool movies yet.
Right. Okay. So yeah, and I'm not ready for the circle of life just yet, Jess. But back to the race. So then we had a bunch of teams also working on assembling. Is this a pew or a desk? What was it that they were putting together?
It's a desk. And I think you put like two kids in it and they sit on this sort of church pew side, and then there's a desk part in front of them.
Yeah. And the different teams were having some issues. We thought that it was going to be pretty easy for Liz and Michael. They too had some difficulty, but not enough to really slow them down. Brooke and Scott seem to be getting into it over putting the stuff together.
Yeah, I think their impulse when they chose each other was like, here is another person who's very driven and very type A, but you put two type A people together and this is what you get.
Yeah. At the point where Brooke was yelling at Scott, that was when Becca was like, Brooke is very negative. And it's like, well, that was going to be a precursor for what was going to come.
Yeah. I mean, Becca didn't remain a shining beacon of positivity for all 43 minutes of this episode.
Yeah. We didn't hear Brooke say this to Scott.
You are an absolute idiot, dude.
That wasn't Brooke.
That was definitely not Brooke.
Yeah. And of course, Sarah and Shamir were also having some issues. We did hear from Shamir that his sister builds all his IKEA stuff.
How much IKEA stuff does he have?
Probably a lot.
I mean, IKEA is pretty great, but, you know, there's a limit. If you put too much, your house starts to look like the showroom.
So in addition, you mentioned that London was going to. She thought she was going to be able to ace the basket weaving because of her professional knitting, but it was going to sour quickly for her. Lola was going to need to switch.
Yeah. And it seemed like it didn't look to me like they gave it enough of a shot, but, you know, they know themselves and it worked out okay for them because they're still in the race.
Yeah. The big story going on at this point in the show, though, was we had Matt and Redmond. They were completing the basket weaving task, and we knew that Seth and Olive were on their heels. They showed up. Now, Redmond did attempt a joke on last week's show. And again, he is trying to use humor here as a defense mechanism, perhaps, but it's really not going over well, Jess.
Before Palm Springs.
I think he's going to try and shoot this or arrest it. Can I shade?
Yes.
And he's going to try and detain the basket.
I mean, why is this even in the show?
You know, I'd say Redmond's getting an even worse edit than Shamir.
I mean, like this, no more jokes, Redmond. That's it. I mean, what are we even talking about? This doesn't even make sense what he's saying. Seth, he's a cop and he's going to try to...
Before Palm Springs.
I think he's going to try and shoot this or arrest it.
Can I shade?
Yes.
And he's going to try and detain the basket.
Shoot, arrest, or detain the basket.
And you know, he's like, he spent the entire ferry ride, like sitting in the corner, thinking up like little one-liners, little zingers for each
that's like
person
the
left in the
store
race.
Call. They're running out of you.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, he's going to end up next to London next time. And he's going to say, oh, well, London's got this basket of stuff at the market. I bet she's going to try to crochet it.
Yeah. So I think he's got to keep workshopping some of these jokes. Maybe Matt can get involved.
Yeah. I mean, Matt's not doing anything.
Yeah. Okay, but really, Redmond is officially at this point, we could say, not funny.
No, he's not even like dad unfunny. He's just not funny.
Yeah, he seems mean-spirited almost.
A little bit.
Okay, so Matt and Redmond, they made their baskets. They end up moving on to the other half of the task. We see some teams having some issues with carrying the desks around. Brooke and Scott, they were having some problems with it. And Shamir is getting pretty salty, Jess.
Shamir is in a lot of pain, Rob.
Yes.
And I don't think we want to diminish somebody's pain.
Okay, so he's cranky is what you're saying.
Yeah, he's cranky and he's got a splinter and it's hot. And, you know, he's got that whole desk on his shoulders.
Right. Now, I don't understand what Sarah and Shamir were trying to do when they go to actually carry the desk. It's like Shamir has like the whole thing on his shoulders. And then Sarah is getting in there also. And she's like pushing down on it. But like, it's the most asinine way that you would attempt to carry that thing.
Yeah, you would only carry that thing like that if you were close to the same height, which I don't think they really are.
No. Or if you had like one person, maybe try it like that.
Yeah.
But
the only thing I can think of is maybe one of them is a rower, because it kind of reminded me of how you carry a crew boat. But even then, you don't do that with people that are not close to your height.
Right. Okay. So we started to get teams reaching the roadblock. What's for dinner? We've seen this before on The Amazing Race where the teams get sent to a market with a shopping list. Do you like tasks like this, Jess?
This felt really unoriginal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see why it's a perennial favorite, because it does expose you to the local color. It gets you interacting with the locals. It gets you exposed to, like, different kinds of food. And there's some budgeting and haggling. Like, it's a good task for that reason, but we've seen it so many times and there's definitely no new spin on this. Like, this felt like every other time that we've had this.
Yeah. Well, this was a halal chicken you had to find.
Yes. And I can see why that would be puzzling to people that know what that means, because it specifically says you want a live chicken that's halal, but you know, halal is usually a status that you would apply to a dead chicken.
Yeah. Jess, now I'm a little confused. So the teams had to get a live chicken, but then did they need to take it somewhere to be slaughtered?
Yeah, they needed to. Well, halal refers to a particular method in which it's slaughtered. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's probably a couple of different butchers at the market, and one of them might not be halal and one of them is. And so you have to get the chicken and make it halal by taking it to the right butcher, who will kill it in the appropriate manner. And then, you know, there's potential for a couple of chickens to get wasted here. Somebody takes it to the wrong butcher. You got someone like Joey that forgets to get the chicken killed. There's a lot of ways that could go wrong.
Okay. So it seems like to me the race really is yada-yada-ing the chicken slaughtering.
It is. I guess they were hoping somebody would be super grossed out by it, and nobody was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So the different teams are having some issues. There's an issue with money. A lot of teams are running out of money. They're paying too much for things. They're getting ripped off left and right by the locals, Jess.
Yeah, it looked like some of this stuff cost more than like the Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Amazing Race team, they also are not great negotiators. They tend to, you know, buy something, and then after they pay the person, try to say, no, that's too much money. Give me some money back.
I think that's not how bargaining works.
I mean, we saw it with a couple of teams. We saw Shamir and Sarah in the cab with that. And then we saw Sarah try to do that, like, oh, I have no money left. I need to go back to the stores where I bought things and tell people to give me money back.
Yeah, and then we saw Olive, like, dip into her Brazilian money.
Yes, and then it seemed like she was trying to, like, run away, and then, but it was only really by the grace of the some of these vendors that they let her go back and say, that, okay, fine, you're good. But they might have already been eliminated by that point. Production might have just said, all right, it's fine, let them go.
At that point, production might have just kind of subtly settled the bill.
Yeah, they said, okay, we got yada, yada. So
yeah,
that was some interesting negotiating tactics in the market. So we were getting to the point where it was clearly going to be Sarah and Shamir or Seth and Olive as the teams were checking in. Mike and Liz were one. Tara and Joey were two. Vank and Ashton. They had a memorable run in with Matt and Redmond at the pit stop, Jess.
Yeah. And you can tell that Phil is just kind of over all of this stuff.
You think so? I thought it was funny that we saw Vank and Ashton check in, and Phil was like, oh, we have another team here. Who could this be? Like, oh, it's Matt and Redmond. And that he was Redmond again. He's hot.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Rob. There are a lot of attractive men on this season.
Well, I mean, confrontational.
I know what you mean.
Yes. So he's ready to go and really ready to get back into it with Ashton. This rivalry is not going away, Jess.
I think they can expect to eat U-turns at least until Bank and Ashton are out of it.
Yeah. Okay. So then we have Team Fun. They're in fifth place for now. And then Team Lolo comes in, and then Brooke and Scott. But suddenly, Jess, we go back to the mat and Team Fun is there. And they say, Phil, we've realized that we've lost a passport. Floyd has lost his passport, Jess.
Well, this is an interesting thing. I think that's not exactly how it was portrayed on the show. And I think this kind of gives you a weird little peek behind the curtain of how things happen once you check in. Like, we don't get to see what happens to the teams once they check in at the mat. You assume they just go to wherever they're going to spend the night. But what we saw this episode, we saw Phil addressing Floyd and Becca and saying, I understand you don't have your passport, which to me is a slightly different thing. Like, I feel like they must check in and then they have to talk to a producer and sort of like do a postmortem of the leg and go through and make sure they have all the things they need for the next leg. And it's at that point, production probably checks to make sure they have their passports. So we don't have something happen at like the beginning of the next leg where a team is like, oh, we've got this much money for this leg of the race. We're going to the airport and I don't have my passport.
Yeah, that is very interesting that you probably that they have to like, okay, let's see the passports. Okay, good. And then they go through everything. So, yeah. And all of a sudden, Team Fun, when they check in, feels like, Becca, I've never seen a smile so big on somebody's face. And Jess, how things turned quickly. I was really, I was shocked. I was like, oh my God, I can't have Team Fun fighting with each other.
Well, it's high highs and low lows on Team Fun.
No, low lows a different team.
Oh, right, right.
they knit. But yeah, I could not believe when we got this sequence, Jess.
We need a call. Our taxi driver coming.
You are an absolute idiot, dude.
I mean, Becca, where it's Team Fun.
And this is a really hard thing to watch, Rob, because you know, with teams where people know each other beforehand, where they have a pre-existing relationship, you could see something like that go down and you could think, well, maybe that's just how they talk to each other. And I think we've had the maybe that's just how they talk to each other conversation many, many times over the years, like specifically with teams like Tim and Marie. They would say those things, like she would say those things to him and we'd be like, that's just their dynamic. And to hear Becca say this to someone she's known for less than a week at this point, like that feels harder. That feels harder to get past.
Poor Floyd.
Poor Floyd.
I mean, should we be saying poor Floyd or we should be saying Floyd, you idiot. What are you thinking? Losing your passport.
In fairness, he was an absolute idiot. Like you always zip that fanny pack and they are super fans. Floyd should know better. He's seen The Amazing Race before. He's seen how people lose their passports and he should know that you have to keep very close track of those things.
Sure. But do you think that they can get over this? I mean, Floyd seems like that maybe could be a sensitive guy. That can he ever go back to the way it was with Becca?
I think they could rediscover the fun.
Yeah.
Like Floyd seems suitably contrite over all of this and he knows it was his fault. They look like they're taking steps to remedy it. And I thought they did something really, really smart this leg that we can't gloss over.
Yeah.
Which was, we saw this in the episode, I guess, because it was kind of foreshadowing it. But when they spoke to their cab driver, they got his card and they had his contact information with them. And I would imagine they didn't do it thinking they were going to lose their passport. They figured, what if we have a double leg in Zanzibar? What if we need a cab driver tomorrow morning and we need somebody that's really good? We know this guy is good. We can just call him and have him continue to take us around. So it was smart of them to have his contact information on hand when they needed it much sooner than they thought they would.
Yeah. How often do teams do that, Jess? Was that something that was like a really out of the box idea that just paid major dividends? Or is that sort of standard operating procedure on the race?
I feel like teams must do this because it seems like common sense to me, but I don't think I've ever seen it happen like that.
I mean, first off, I think that they were pretty lucky that Abdul, the cab driver, had a business card. I mean, how many Zanzibar cab drivers have cards?
I don't know. Cab drivers in lots of places have cards.
Okay.
Especially if it depends on, like, if you're the kind of place where you have a lot of street hails, you probably don't need one. But if this is a city where you get a cab by calling one, of course you're going to have a business card.
I got a cab again down in Zanzibar. Abdul the driver gave me his card. Yeah. I think that's how the rest of the lyrics go.
I think you're right.
So then ultimately, thank God Abdul was on call. He didn't like go home and go to bed or anything like that. He brought the passport back and then Sarah and Shamir check in. Becca and Floyd become the new team number 8. And then the fun meter was not on high, Jess. We had the bubble burst and the fun meter market crashed.
Fun meter took a hit.
Yeah. Becca put Floyd on notice. She says, you lose the passport again and you will have a broken nose. She will now be the holder of the passport.
And again, this is one of those things like, because they don't know each other, it's hard for me to tell how serious she is. And
oh, I thought deadly serious.
It's seemed pretty serious. Yeah. I wonder, do you get ejected from the race if you physically harm your partner?
Well, I think at the point where you lose your passport, then you are already out of the race. And then I think then like what happens post race is really, you know, your own thing.
Yeah. And I don't, who knows, maybe it's considered justifiable.
Perhaps
if you lose the passport, your partner is allowed to take a swing at you.
Jess, I could see you potentially losing your temper if your Amazing Race partner lost the passport.
Well, yeah, this is one reason that I'm never going to go on the Amazing Race.
Yeah,
because I don't need to get arrested for assault in Zanzibar.
Right. And I always go back to why I would not want to do the race with my significant other, where I've been in this situation before where, okay, I can't find the boarding passes or something like that. And I just need like a minute to like look for it. But in that moment where she is aware that I can't find the thing, she's got like going nuts and yelling at me. It's just making my job harder.
Yeah, well, my husband won't even let me hold the boarding pass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is so concerned that I might lose it. I probably will.
Okay.
But he will not let me handle my own boarding pass. It's like he gives it to me so I can have them scan it and then he takes it right back.
Okay. And then finally, Seth and Olive end up making it to the mat and sort of a unmemorable exit from the game for Seth and Olive.
Yeah, I really expected more out of Seth and Olive. I thought they seemed like interesting people that were going to go very far. And this just like when a team this strong goes out this early, there's usually a better reason for it.
Yeah, they were a really strong team. You know, any other season and any other leg where they're not blind U-turned, it feels like that they could have been a contender. But Jess, I think I know why you picked them. You always say like, give me a boring team. That's who you think is going to win. And all the more reason to think that Seth and Olive could have gone the distance.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the whole reason I picked them. They seemed kind of boring.
Okay. Jess, anything else about this particular episode and leg before we get to some questions?
I wanted to highlight Vank looking for the bananas. I thought that was pretty great.
Yes. What was your favorite part about that?
He's looking around and he's like, where are the yellow bananas? And the yellow bananas are like 3 inches from his head.
Okay. All right. Jess, let's jump into some of the questions. Okay. Brendan Fitzpatrick wants you to explain what would have happened if Team Fun hadn't found the passports, because even out of the game, they wouldn't have been able to get home without them.
They would go to a consulate, and this has happened before. Yes, like this is ABBA. Not the first time a team. Yeah, there's ABBA and there is Zev and Justin lost their passports, I believe, in Cambodia. There were back all the way back to season 13, I believe it was Tony and Dallas lost their passports in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Russia is not a good place to lose your passport, apparently, especially when you're on the Amazing Race, because it's happened twice. But you lose your passport and if you don't get it back immediately, you're going to be stuck there with like someone from production babysitting you while you wait for the consulate to issue you an emergency passport.
Who drew the short straw on that?
Man, that's got to suck.
Yeah, it's the worst part of your day. Hey, I got this great job on the Amazing Race production. Like, oh, I had to sit with a team for 3 weeks at the Russian consulate.
It's kind of like being the person that has to take the pre-jury survivors on their trip.
Oh, it's so much worse. Then this girl, she broke the guy's nose. I had to sit there at the consulate. It's terrible. Mike Bloom wants to know, Magic Mike wants to ask, does Abdul the cab driver get the leasee this week for making sure that we did not get a depressing early exit for Team Fun?
Well, I think he's got to be the MVP.
Yes.
Because, you know, a lesser cab driver probably would not have held on to the passport.
Yeah. Big save for Abdul, the cab driver, honorary member of Team Fun, the official cab driver of Team Fun.
You know, they've got his business card if you need to reach him.
Okay. PJ wants to know, is Becca's quickness to turn on Floyd going to lead to an ultimate demise for Team Fun? I was surprised at how understandably angry she got at Floyd. She did go from 0 to 60, Jess.
Yeah, but you know, what we've seen of Becca is she is an emotional person. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody that gets that happy can get that angry on a dime. So I would not be surprised, like, just because they were having a lot of fun. And again, there are lots of teams that it's easy to have a great time when you're doing really well. But how you handle adversity really is going to determine how far you go in the race.
Jess, Scott Schaefer has a question for you to put on your Amazing Race historian hat. Which is more common, the U-turn team overcomes the setback a la the boys, or it sends them home a la Team America? If you had to get into your Amazing Race sabermetrics, how often would you say the U-turn team goes home?
Well, if you want a real history lesson on this, Rob, this is one of these things where when they first rolled out the U-turn, it was too powerful. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a hidden immunity idol where you could play it after the votes had been read. It was just like way too much. You turn somebody and it was almost a guarantee that they'd get knocked out of the race. And for a really long time, that was kind of why it was. And that was why we started to see things get added onto the U-turn. Like, pretty soon we have a double U-turn so that there's not one team that's just stuck in the way back of the pack. Mm-hmm. So I think in the early days, certainly you almost always would be the team going home if you got U-turned. You're just screwed. Mm-hmm. But I think they've kind of done a lot to nerf it. And we know that the race has gotten a little bit easier in the last few seasons, to the point where there's not going to be this incredibly daunting task where you have to like memorize five phrases in a tonal language, and you're only going to be able to do it if you're already fluent in that language, mm-hmm. which is the U-turn example that I'm thinking of off the top of my head. So yeah, in the early days, it was much rougher. And I think more recently it's become more possible to overcome a U-turn.
Jeff Satoro wants to know, have Matt and Redmond become the true villains? I was rooting for them episode one, but they've really turned. Has Redmond specifically become the villain of the season?
It seems like it. He sure feels like it right now. And, you know, he's Shamir? Shamir's not a villain. Mm-hmm. Shamir is a buffoon, but not a villain.
Yeah. Redmond seems like he's just like a pretty easy to blow his top. Could Becca get there?
Becca could get there. I think Joey could get there. We saw from him like deploying a U-turn and then just kind of blatantly lying about it like it was nothing. I think he's angling for it as well.
Okay, we'll see. We'll be on villain watch week after week. This is a question for you in terms of the draft. Jeff also wants to know, Jess, if you could redraft now, who would be your first pick? Who would be the number one pick overall?
Well, I think Liz wouldn't have gone last. I think I have to feel like Michael and Liz have a better shot than any of us could have anticipated.
Sure. What is the ultimate scoring in this with these partners? Just how many legs do they complete, or how many roadblocks do they do?
We get points for there are points available for successfully deploying a U-turn, using Express Pass, using a fast forward, saying the episode title, saying the on-screen hashtag. You get points deducted for facing a time penalty, getting a U-turn, coming in last place in an elimination leg, and then points are distributed based on finish order after that.
Yeah. This is an interesting question from Derek, who wants to know, so is Shamir secretly an 8-year-old who wished himself into an adult body? I'm convinced that's why he acts that way.
I didn't see any Zoltar machines at the beginning of the race, but I could have been looking in the wrong spot.
Yeah, I want to be big. And then, he didn't know how to necessarily wear a harness properly then. Is that possible?
It explains it better than anything else. Like, he got really upset about that splinter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm buying it. This is my new favorite theory.
Okay, Christine has another Shamir question. She says that word of ball talk on other RHAP shows last week led me to dive in and watch these three episodes. I came away thinking Shamir may be the best person a ball OB could happen to. The guys could use a touch of it as well. And it was fun to watch episode two and try to guess the person who was be tested high in the sky.
All right.
What's a ball OB?
I'm not entirely sure.
Should I look that up right after Quiche on the Urban Dictionary?
Yeah. See what they say on Urban Dictionary. Could this be an autocorrect thing?
It may well be an autocorrect thing. We'll have to see.
Could it be an autocorrect for owie?
A ball owie.
I think it's an autocorrect for owie. unless he wins an off-Broadway award for his balls.
Shamir may be the best person a ball owie could happen to. Maybe. Either way, I think we found the hashtag.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah. Okay. And then finally, Felipe wants to know, who is more quiche between the two of us?
I think it's probably you, but you own a lot of plaid.
Yeah. So that's a very unquiche.
Yeah. But you have, don't you have one of your sponsors is like some kind of fashion club?
Yes. Yes. So maybe that stuff is Nicole says sometimes that stuff is too quiche for me.
Yeah, well, maybe I think you're kind of aspiring to be quicher and I kind of don't care.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jess, great job once again here breaking down episode number 3 of Amazing Race 29. So we're at what, like about the quarter mark of this Amazing Race, give or take?
Seems like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So how are you feeling? What's the big picture for Amazing Race Perfect Strangers?
Well, you know, it's funny. I over at previously.tv, I have to rate things watch or skip based on like whether I feel like your DVR really deserves to have this in it or not. And I've been rating all 3 of these episodes skip so far, but I think it's early yet. And the early stages of the Amazing Race are almost always the least interesting.
I think that the season so far, I'm very much thumbs up on it. I like it. I feel like that this was the weakest of the 3 episodes, though.
Agreed. Like nothing happened to anybody's balls. So, you know,
right.
What is there for us?
There was really some drama between, you know, Matt and Redmond fighting with different people and you didn't know who was going to get eliminated, Sarah and Shamir or Seth and Olive. But I don't think I was invested enough in Seth and Olive to care that they were going to be the likely team to go home.
You know, as much as I thought I'd be rooting for them going in, I agree. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Although I really do have to say on the whole, this season is a pleasant surprise. I thought it was going to be terrible. And once again, I've come in very pessimistic and I have been proven wrong.
Jess, the beauty of low expectations once again.
Once again.
Yes. All right. So I do not have low expectations about getting back together next week to recap episode number 4 of The Amazing Race 29, hashtag ball owie. Of course, you could follow Jess on Twitter. She is at Haymaker Hattie. Jess, I saw a lot of praise for your voicemail podcast with me from last week.
Yeah, well, that was a lot of fun. You know, I always love doing the voicemails and I've been really happy that people enjoyed it.
Yes. And I got a lot of calls for more Yoda and more Penner singing songs from Greece.
Yeah, I really think it didn't really matter who you had on the voicemails last week because Penner singing Grease was going to be a hit.
Yes, not like my alternate take of Zanzibar.
Your alternate take of Zanzibar is also very good, but I feel like it's missing something.
Missing
maybe
Penner.
What it's missing. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be back next week to recap episode number 4. Also on the old reality TV wrap ups. Look for my exit interviews with both people from the latest Big Brother Canada double eviction. Plus, we've got a lot more coming up with the LFC roundtable this weekend. Plus, I will be back talking about the next Big Brother Canada episode this Monday night, in addition to everything going on the main podcast feed with Survivor. And so, Jess, I'd love to play us out with the rest of the new Zanzibar theme from Andrew Fair, if you don't mind.
Amazing.
To Kale and Andy from Australia, thanks so much.
Well, it seems the race was threatened by the axe. On Thursday the 10th, it didn't lose its style. Took Owens on the chauffeur's hat, and Russian balls always make good TV. Whoa! And now the race is heading east to Zanzibar. Jessica's draft team wasn't worth her while.
Whoa! Don't you turn Redmond and Matt? What was the point of learning Swahili? Hilly blew in the newspaper. Hakuna Matata. The amazing race in Zanzibar tonight. That's where they be.